Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
It's Friday
on my mind.
Because it's Friday.
Oh, Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind. Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and happy First Amendment Friday to you. Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk for the United States of America. We're live tonight from Charlottesville, Virginia, with our local affiliate station, WCHV, the home of Thomas Jefferson and James Madison back in the day, and Joe Thomas at WCHV these days. We're actually broadcasting from a venue called City Space in downtown Charlottesville, overlooking the Jefferson Foundation's Free Speech Wall. So what better place to have First Amendment Friday? By the way, the First Amendment is inscribed on that wall that's right below us outside, and it's there so that people can come up and write whatever they want to write, send whatever message they want to the community, to the government, to fellow citizens. It's a great monument to Thomas Jefferson. And we're raising money with WCHV for two veteran and first responder groups, Parade Rest, which aids service member families while deployed and during their reentry to society. You can find them at paraderestva.org. And also Project Healing Waters, giving injured and disabled vets fly fishing experiences. Try to give them a little thank you for all the wonderful things that they've done. Find them at projecthealingwaters.org. That's projecthealingwaters.org. We've got a lot to talk about on a First Amendment Friday. First of all, our quick poll. I know we've been talking illegal aliens today. We're going to have to talk about that some more tonight, but we have a lot of other issues to cover as well. Should food stamp benefits come with a work requirement? One Louisiana congressman, I got a chance to see him a couple of weeks ago in Baton Rouge, Representative Garrett Graves, great idea. He's introduced legislation that would strengthen the work requirements for people who get food stamps. He says by putting certain parameters or requirements on the program where you actually have to do job searches and you actually have to do interviews and you have to participate in job training activities, it is migrating people from dependents to the workforce, and that's a win for everyone. That's the way Congressman Garrett Graves of Louisiana describes it. And I think it's a great idea. So I'm going to ask you in the quick poll tonight, should food stamp benefits come with a work requirement? Tonight's quick poll, found at LarsLarson.com and brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. It has the kind of conservative values that I believe in. Just go to amac.us, not .com. You can also call and join at 888-262-2006. AMAC is better, better for you and better for America. Details continue to emerge tonight about a disgruntled, fired doctor identified as Henry Bello, who went on a shooting spree at a hospital in the Bronx, just about a mile away from the baseball stadium there, and he's dead, which is a good thing at this point. He wounded at least three others at a New York City hospital in the Bronx, and reports say that Bello took his own life. We'll get you details as they come. This has just happened in the last couple of hours. On the other side of the country is a big win today for Second Amendment rights in California as a federal judge blocks a law that requires citizens to dispose of their large-capacity magazines for either pistols or rifles. More video has been leaked from Project Veritas of a CNN producer trash-talking, and wait till you hear what was caught on tape this time. The repeal of Obamacare is on the top of the Republicans' list, and Richard Epstein's going to join me to talk about how it might actually be repealed. Even President Trump is saying tonight, as the Senate bill to try to do a halfway repeal of Obamacare appears to be in trouble, then President Trump says the GOP should back a full repeal of Obamacare, which is what a lot of us have been asking for. And the war of words continues between the President of the United States and MSNBC's low-rated morning show. I'll share with you the latest developments coming up on that. But if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism on First Amendment Friday from a great town like Charlottesville, You're welcome to join at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, I want to shoot one thought at you. Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York, was talking in the last hour or so about his reaction to the shooting incident at that Bronx Lebanon hospital not far from Yankee Stadium. And here's the thing I'd like to leave you with. Democrats and liberals are always saying that what we need to solve the problem of people committing acts of violence is more gun laws. Well, let me tell you that I think New York City and New York State have some of the craziest gun laws, the most restrictive gun laws in America. And what did that do about today's situation? It did nothing about today's situation. It didn't stop it. And writing more laws, more extensive laws, more restrictive laws, that's not going to do anything for us either. So, glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Oh, and one other thing. About that CNN producer that I mentioned who was out trash-talking, listen to this report. The video that they've dropped out, we told you about an earlier video earlier this week. The producer in question is identified as Jimmy Carr, who works on CNN's morning show, New Day. Not clear when or where his statements were recorded, but on Project Veritas hidden camera, he is shown disparaging Donald Trump as a fraudulent candidate who does not believe in or care about the principles he espouses. Carr is also recorded telling a Project Veritas journalist that his anti-Trump views are shared by a vast majority of people he works with at CNN. I'd say that makes sense. On the inside, we all recognize he is a clown, says Carr, that he is hilariously unqualified for this. He's really bad at this, and he does not have America's best interests. We recognize he's just, well, then he uses a word I can't use on the radio. He's just blanking crazy. That's what Carr says. 90% of us are on board with the fact that he's just crazy. And when the Project Undercover journalist from Veritas says, would it be fair to question the intellect of the American voter? Here's what Carr says. Oh, no, they're stupid as blank. Kind of word you can't use. I'd use Bernie Sanders, BS, as the replacement for that. They're stupid as blank. Now, I want to know from you. If CNN's so-called journalists believe that you are stupid as blank, do you still want to watch anything that CNN puts on the air? Do you think that any of it has any validity at all? Because this is the attitude of young millennials who are working for one of the biggest news organizations in the world, literally. Oh, and by the way, speaking of so-called journalists, the hosts of MSNBC's Morning Joe made a startling allegation today. They say the White House threatened them with a negative story in National Enquirer if they didn't back off and apologize to the president. Well, now the president has responded. He says, no, that's not the case at all. In fact, they called me wanting me to kill the story at the National Enquirer, and he told them no. So it sounds like they weren't very happy with Donald Trump, and they showed it on the air. And I guess if you're going to shoot all kinds of nasty words toward the president, don't be surprised if this president shoots a few nasty words back the other way. Hey, do you have some aches and pains? I'm 58. I have some aches and pains. Even my producer, Carl, has some aches and pains. He's a dozen years younger than me. Well, Relief Factor is one of the ways to address that. It combats the root causes of pain, and that's inflammation. And you know where it comes from. Exercise, overexertion, aging, everyday living, things you can't do much about, but you can address it with Relief Factor. 100 million Americans suffer from ongoing pain due to aging, exercise, and overexertion and all those things. I started taking this a couple of years ago, and now I notice that when I go out and do a Saturday full of yard work, I don't pay for it on Sunday or Monday the way I used to. You should try it out. 3-week quick start is $19.95, about 95 cents a day, less than the cost of a cup of coffee every day. For pain relief, visit relieffactor.com. That's one word, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384. Coming up in a moment, given the complexity of Obamacare, successful reform is possible, but not one single bill. Or could we get it done with one single repeal of the entire mess created by Barack Obama? We'll talk to Richard Epstein. You're listening to First Amendment Friday live from Charlottesville with WCHV.
Honestly provocative talk at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. It is a First Amendment Friday heading into Independence Day weekend. And by the way, a happy Independence Day to you and yours as we head into this weekend. We're live in Charlottesville, Virginia with our local affiliate WCHV. And it's a real pleasure to welcome back to the program Richard Epstein, professor of law at New York University Law School and a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. Professor, good to have you back on.
Well, it's always nice to be here, Lars.
So today it looks as though the Senate bill that would complete the, I guess, partway, halfway, quarterway, somewhat kind of repeal of Obamacare, I can't think of more complimentary terms for it, may be in trouble. And I guess Donald Trump has now commented this afternoon that maybe we should just go for full repeal. So what's the right way to get rid of this thing?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to decide that you do want to get rid of it, and there are two pieces of it, and each of them has serious problems, and you, I think, would like to remove them both, but it's not clear that you want to do so at the same time. Piece number one is the mandates both for the individuals, which have been in place, and the employer mandate, which keeps getting postponed, and the other half is how it is that you control the cost associated with the Medicare. And the issue is whether or not you can do a frontal assault on this stuff. And I think, in effect, that given the weakness of some of the Republicans and the adamant opposition of the defendants, working with a two-vote margin, you have to think about incremental steps that will do a lot of good. When I wrote this column in The Hill, which I think prompted your phone call, what I said is the incremental changes that you want to do is not to abolish exchanges as such, but to actually make them exchanges in which you don't have to satisfy elaborate preconditions before you can buy or sell. The way in which the system was designed by the Obama administration violated every known rule of insurance and of competition. They told you the only dimensions on which you could compete, which turned out to be price with respect to a fixed set of goods and services, and it turns out that the other conditions were so rigged that massive withdrawal from the market had taken place. The Democrats like to think that this is a problem they can fix, but given the size of the subsidies to keep people in right now, it's almost unimaginable that you can go further. So what you have to do is to start philosophically with undoing the mistake that got the Obamacare situation into trouble to begin with. When you had a system which was part free and part regulated in 2008, you need a theory to explain which part of this thing is busted up. And it turns out that the regulations, even at that time, on a lot of issues like mandates, were very, very bad. And the correct rule was to increase the level of competition and choice by getting rid of some of the state mandates so that companies could offer packages that people want. Well, they didn't do that. What they did is they tightened the noose even further, added the subsidies in, found out that you had to have transfer payments, mostly illegal, between two kinds of insurance companies, a real mess. So the way to do this is to immediately unpack all of the restrictions on the way in which the insurance packages are put together. And so you get rid of these very exotic maximum, you know, minimum benefits for all the colors. You get rid of the price-fixing situations with respect to price motivations. You don't require people to spend only a certain amount of money on advertisement and everything else. And if you take all of that stuff off, it looks more and more like an exchange, a market exchange, not a government exchange. What you should expect to do is to see some insurance companies coming back in. You should see people who now think that they could get attractive practice packages get out of the Medicare situation or Medicaid situation, which is very, very unattractive. And you could start reversing the thing right now. What's so troublesome about the Republicans is they know that's everything wrong, but all they talk about is price, and it costs too much. What you have to do is to explain the reforms that you want, and I've given you a couple, and there are more. And if you did that, liberalize the situation, the markets would return. It's not that much difference from getting rid of rent control and waiting to see the way in which buyers and sellers in a rental market start to equilibrate. They just didn't do that, and so that's why they've lost the rhetorical battle going forward with the public.
I got to tell you, Professor, I don't disagree with anything you say. I just see all these other opportunities for things that would address cost. You know, in addition to what you've said, can I add this on? Why did they not address the sales across state lines at all in the Republican side?
You're absolutely right. I mean, this was so because there was a deal. It was the Obamacare deal, which is the insurance companies would sign on to the program if what they did is gave them local monopoly protection. protection. And that's absolutely one of the things that you want to do. The way you increase competition and choice is to let anybody sell anywhere in the United States so long as they have a license to sell in their home state. And that will completely transform some of these things. It's not going to be the perfect answer, Lars, because if you keep the restrictions on what you can buy or sell, and you find out that every insurer has left a particular state except arguably one, the terms of entry are going to be so unattractive that other companies are not going to go in.
I'm with you, Professor, and that's why I said everything you said and add on the cross-state.
Amen, brother.
Well, here's the other thing.
I mean, as I said, I didn't have a chance to list all the things, but, you know, allowing people to turn down customers, giving greater fluctuation on community rates, there are about a dozen things that you can start to do. And every one that you do makes the noose a little bit less tight, and after a while, people actually start to breathe again. The Obama people really thought that if you tightened everything up, the only thing people would compete upon would be essentially the quality of services. What they forgot to ask was the question of whether the market would exist at all after all this stuff went into place. And it turns out that the learning was not by insurance companies on how to price this game. The real learning took place on the part of patients groups, which figured out how you can game the system. To give you but one illustration told to me by a hospital administrator, he said, look, what happens is you've got a bunch of kids or young adults who've got serious cases like diabetes, which need extensive treatment. Well, the Diabetes Association will organize, essentially, and tell each of these people how they can sign up for the program. Well, they know they have pre-existing conditions. They know that the rates can't adjust for it, so they sign on. So a lot of the increase that you've gotten in business is increase that comes at a net loss to the plan. And you have to be able to change that sort of thing with some flexibility in pricing. Here's another reform, since, you know, you're adding more on. One of the things that you say is if you want to get in, you can't get out unless you stay for at least a year. And that way, you know, you can't come in, get your operation, and disappear. What they assumed is that everybody would be virtuous. Well, people are virtuous until you put money on the table, and then they say, well, why should I stay in this business to pay myself an extra $5,000 when I don't think I'll need health care anymore? No private insurer would ever take the risk of that kind of adverse selection, that kind of moral hazard. And the government said, well, these things really don't exist. And then when they do exist, they say, how could that possibly be? But think of it this way. You tell young people, you know what? You really ought to join these plans because you have to hold your elder brethren, i.e., you're going to lose money. And then they say, oh, you really have to join these plans because you're going to need it for emergency care. You're going to be better off. So how can you tell people in one breath that they ought to do it to help everybody else and then to help themselves? Nobody believes anything that they say. And in truth, if you have this community rating, as they do under Obamacare, young people will stay out in groves. And the one good thing about Obamacare, ironically, is that there is a place for no insurance in healthcare markets, just first, you know, patient pays. And you've seen a rise of CityMD and similar organizations about doctors where patients could come in off the street and get themselves pretty darn good care at a fee that they can afford by institutions that can do it. And, Lars, while you're at it, here's another reform you can do. Let corporations and businesses practice medicine. Well, they have to have licensed physicians to do it. Okay, that's fine. But it doesn't say that it has to be a hospital as opposed to Walgreens that could hire them. If you've got a company that knows how to do management, they'll figure out how to manage medical care. And so just one thing after another. So on that side, you just got to liberalize. And the Republicans, have you heard them talk a single word about this? They talk about the bankruptcies, but they have no explanation as to the causes. And so if people don't believe that they have a cure, and in fact, I haven't heard them present one. So I am just, you know, the Democrats are hopeless as far as I'm concerned on all matters of economics and social policy, but the Republicans have been hopelessly inept. So, you know, this is not a winning combination when you have one party which is always wrong and the other party doesn't even know when it's right.
Professor, I can't disagree with anything you say. And if only we were running things instead of those 535. Professor, it is a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for taking the time on a Friday night.
Okay, great. Take care. And good luck
to you. I appreciate it. And good luck to you as well. Professor Richard Epstein, listen, it's a pleasure to be with you. We're live in Charlottesville, Virginia, trying to help out a couple of veterans groups as well with our local friends and affiliates, WCHV. And we'll be back in a moment on First Amendment Friday, heading into Independence Day weekend.
The Lars Larson Show. More honestly provocative talk right now on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Friday as we head up to Independence Day, July the 4th. in the United States of America. And I think Americans can look forward to being more and more independent as we've got a president who's trying to roll back taxes. He's trying to roll back Obamacare. He's rolling back federal regulations. The smaller the government gets, the greater the liberty to the individual citizen. Anyway, we're glad to be here in Charlottesville, Virginia tonight, the place where Thomas Jefferson and James Madison made their homes. And I'll go to your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go right to me, talk@LarsLarson.com. Follow me on Twitter at Lars Larson Show and on Facebook at The Lars Larson Show. Pete's on the line. Hey, Pete, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Lars, and have a good 4th of July weekend.
And you too.
Hey, this gridlock with the Congress, it drives me nuts. They're not getting anything done, and they're looking to see which one does the best. I have a suggestion that might help them get off the dime.
All right,
If they could take the health insurance policy that they have for the Congress and eliminate it, I wish Trump had pumped this up with the public, and have them have to use the health insurance plan that they pick out nationally for us, I think the congressmen will get off their dust and do something.
Pete, I hate to disagree with you only because you sound like a nice guy, but let me ask you something. There are two kinds of solutions to a lot of problems. One makes you feel real good, and the other one actually fixes the problem. Now, which kind do you like?
That's the one that fixes the problem.
Right, because I could say, my boss just fired me from my job, so I'm going to go out and I'm going to flatten his tires. Now, flattening his tires will probably get me thrown in jail. It might get me sued. It'll make me feel good. Because I'll say, he fired me, he shouldn't have, and I'm going to flatten his tires. But it doesn't actually fix the problem. Now, here's what I'm saying in regard to Congress. If you went to the Congress and said, we are cutting you off, you're going to have to go buy your insurance on the private marketplace. The vast majority of members of Congress are very well heeled. Many of them are 100,000 heirs, if you want to say that. A lot of them are millionaires. I the last time I checked, I think the majority in both the House and Senate were millionaires. So they won't break a sweat buying their own policy wherever they want to buy it, and they'll be able to buy a gold plan or a platinum plan instead of the bronze plan like a lot of America. So it won't affect them. It will screw over their staff, and if you say, well, you know, screw them, well, an awful lot of young men and women work for congressmen and senators, and they make, I got to tell you, if you look at it, they make salaries that are pathetic, especially living in Washington, D.C. I'm not asking you to say feel sorry for them, because many of them are building their careers. They're knowingly taking a job that has impossible hours. They work 15 hours a day. They get paid crap wages. They live with three other people in a tiny apartment, but they know that down the line, they may set themselves up to run for office or write a book or work for big companies. And it's a good advance. So there's nothing wrong with it, but all of them will lose insurance and they don't have the money to replace it. So if you're trying to influence somebody's behavior and you give a millionaire a parking ticket, it's not going to influence his behavior. If on the other hand, you total his staff, that doesn't necessarily help anything either. Let me tell you what I think will actually work. You have to understand that in some ways, this gridlock does not make me unhappy. And I'll tell you why. If everybody who went to Washington, D.C. said, oh, we're all on the same page, we all agree with each other, would that be a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's a bad thing because I think sometimes the best ideas come out of bodies where there's strong disagreement. If the chairman of a big company, Nike, Boeing, Microsoft, Amazon, whatever, comes to the table and says, I'm proposing to do X, and half of his board members say, that's the worst idea I've ever heard, it won't work, and half his board members say, it's a pretty good idea, but we should make some major changes to it because your idea has flaws in it. You get a better product out of that, even if there's strong disagreement, if you finally get to that. On the other hand, if every time the boss walks in with the craziest idea, all 12 of his or 15 of his board members say, boss, you're brilliant. We're all going to vote yes on that. I almost guarantee that over the long run, that will produce weaker ideas and bad ideas, and that company will go out of business. So when I see that, whether I like it or not, Susan Collins of Maine, who I disagree with an awful lot of the time, she's a Republican, but she's a very liberal Republican. I'd invite her to join the Democrats. She's almost there. She says, no, this plan is too far to the right. And Rand Paul, who I do admire, and Ted Cruz, who I admire, at the other end saying, this plan is not nearly conservative enough. What would it be like if, like the Democrats, the Republicans just all said, whatever the chairman of the party says, we'll vote for it? I think that produces a weak product. So I want them to disagree at times. If I saw a board of directors or a Congress or a state legislature or a city council that always all agreed on everything, I would think there is something screwed up about that board. And you would have people like Susan Collins, who got elected by telling the people of Maine, these are the principles I'm going to support when I go to Washington. And you have Ted Cruz, who told the people of Texas, these are the principles. And when people go back to D.C. and don't stick by their principles, I don't admire that either, because they may say, well, I voted to get this thing through because we wanted to get something done. Well, sometimes just getting something done doesn't fix the problem. And so be careful of that. And cutting off individual members of Congress, most of them have bank accounts, and it'd be like writing them a parking ticket. Let's go to Doug in Carson City, listening on KKFT. Hey, Doug, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you. What's on my mind, maybe I'm missing something, but I don't think so. Why is it that they have to tie remove and replace? Why can't they repeal Obamacare, make us happy, then say its implementation that will be 6 months from now, and they have 6 months to come up with a worthwhile plan? Why are they tying it together? And I think they're tying it together to have an excuse not to vote it in. That's what
I don't think that's true. But, Doug, okay, let's try your plan. July 1, we repeal Obamacare, and it goes out of existence. Now, they promised to have something done by Christmas that replaces it. So you take everybody who's on the expanded Medicaid, and they are dumped off insurance as of January 1. But they promise, cross their hearts and hope to die, that they will have a replacement for it by Christmas. And then they don't. And you have an entire industry. Believe me, the insurance industry does not turn on a dime. So even if they came up with a plan on, say, December the 1st, do you think the insurance industry could get that thing put in place by January 1? We've seen the whole industry turns very, very slowly. So I think the idea, while it's an interesting one, it does impose a deadline by saying it's gone. If you don't replace it, nothing will be there. The problem is, right now, in my own home state of Washington, the last time I checked a couple of hours ago, their budget was due last night at midnight. It's now due tonight at midnight. If it doesn't come in, the whole state shuts down. I don't even know whether in my home state of Washington the state government has a budget. And they have a hard and fast deadline. I appreciate the call, by the way, but I'm not sure that one would work. Thanks a lot. By the way, I'm on the road. I brought my Harry's razors on the road. Why? I need a nice, clean shave. I'm out in public. People see me. I know I got a face for radio, but I still got to shave every morning. Well, I switched to Harry's a long time ago, and now I get to tell you about it. 3 million guys have joined me in switching to Harrys.com. Jeff and Andy created the company. They were two ordinary guys fed up with paying a lot of money for razors, like I was. They started Harry's, and they fixed shaving. They bought their own factory, and along with it, 100 years of blade-making experience, all their products are backed by a 100% guarantee. They took a little less profit. They sold directly to their customers like me, and they did it over the Internet. And they're so sure that you're going to love it, they offer you their free trial set. All you have to cover is shipping. The Truman Set Ergonomic Handle. 5 precision-engineered blades, a lubricating strip, rich lathering shave gel. I used it this morning. A travel blade cover and post-shave balm. Almost worth $20. Free to you. You just cover shipping. Go to Harrys.com right now and use my name, Lars, at checkout. That's Harrys.com, code word Lars. Don't wait. Get started with Harry's today. Live in Charlottesville, Virginia for First Amendment Friday. Happy Independence Day weekend. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Naysayers go to the head of the line on the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday, live with our affiliate WCHV in Charlottesville, Virginia. Pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get back to your phone calls and emails. But it's a real pleasure to welcome to the program James Fotis, who is the president of the National Center for Police Defense. Mr. Fotis, thanks for taking the time on a Friday night.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
I have to tell you, I have a bit of a dog in the fight because I like Joe Arpaio. I've had him on the show as a guest many times. And I feel that he's being unfairly attacked now. Am I on solid ground?
Oh, you're on solid ground. The government is attacking and doing everything that they can to put this 85-year-old public servant that's given his life to law enforcement in jail. And I was at the trial up until yesterday, and it seems like everything that they've pulled out so far as I'm concerned, and just as a spectator, I believe that Joe's defense team has pretty much put a stop to each one of the witnesses. Not one of the witnesses that they called, especially Joe's ex-attorney, Mr. Casey, was able to say that Joe ever went against the court order that they're claiming that he violated. So I really feel that Joe has a good chance of beating this, and I certainly hope he does. I mean, this man has 50 years in law enforcement. He's given his life to this country, and here's the Obama holdovers trying to put him in jail.
Tell me this. Why hasn't the confirmation of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General changed this? Or would it, is it simply impolitic for the new Attorney General to tell his department to back down? Because as I understand it, there are a couple of cases right now where the DOJ has backed down on cases in defending laws they thought that Sessions thinks are wrong, that the previous administration thought were right. Can he not just tell them, this is a bad prosecution, I want you to end it?
I would think that Jeff Sessions would be the first one to step up and say, this is ridiculous, and drop this case, and especially with all of the information they had on the first judge, Judge Snow, who, in my opinion, made such horrible decisions and accusations against Joe Arpaio. This is personal, political, and the case should be dropped. And I believe I dropped off 40,000 petitions to Washington. I carried them by hand there, brought them to Jeff Sessions' office, and I still wonder if anybody ever looked at them. But these were supporters of the sheriffs, and and nobody. They haven't heard from anyone. And as you know, there was also a writ sent to the Supreme Court asking for the case to be dropped or at least give him a jury trial. And yeah, he's not even entitled to that.
And he's sitting in front of a judge. He's sitting in front of a judge that was appointed by Bill Clinton, right?
Exactly. And she's going to make the final decision on this. And she's actually, and I've never heard of this, she's actually asking the witnesses questions. She's making up questions
that
and asking the witnesses questions. I never saw a judge do that.
Now, let me ask, because the judge is supposed to be the neutral arbiter who decides what gets, what gets heard and what doesn't get heard. Well, so she's taken a side in this, it seems. Let me ask you about this. I want you to explain what it is that Joe Arpaio is accused of, because as I understand it, the accusation of misdemeanor criminal contempt of court. Ordinarily, you can get contempt of court if a judge orders you to do something and then you don't do it. That's contempt of court. So if a judge orders you to answer a question and you don't, he can throw you in jail and say, I'm going to hold you there until you answer the question. He's being held because he arrested people who were illegal aliens, who were in the country illegally, and they were violating federal law. And he held them on the basis of violation of law. Isn't that what a sheriff is supposed to do?
Exactly. And obviously, being the highest elected constitutional officer, he was doing exactly what he was elected to do. Now, this judge started going after him. This case has gone on for 7 years. First, it was just contempt of court. Then in 2011, he made a preliminary contempt of court order, and then in 2013, I believe it became criminal contempt when the Obama administration came in and said we're taking over criminal contempt of court, and we're not allowing him. And this was 2 weeks before his election, which has never been done before, and we're not allowing him to. We will not allow him to have a jury trial. So all he did was enforce the laws on the books and go out and bring in illegal aliens, and I want to know when the term illegal stopped meaning illegal. These people were illegally in the country, and they actually brought in the head of the Border Patrol, who, after ICE was told by the Obama administration to stop taking illegals, the Border Patrol said, we continued and we wanted illegals. And this Maricopa County Sheriff's Department, every time they had illegals, we told them, we will take them, and we will either come pick them up or you can bring them to us. And that's what he testified to. They did nothing illegal as far as we were concerned.
You know what? What kills me is the dichotomy of this, Mr. Fotis. I'm talking to James Fotis from the National Center for Police Defense. On one hand, we have cities and counties and states that have declared they will actively oppose the enforcement of federal law as sanctuary cities, and they're being lauded by the press for doing this. On the other hand, we have a sheriff of a quarter-century service to Maricopa County, the biggest county in the state of Arizona that has two-thirds of the population of the entire state in one county, who's being punished, or at least proposed for punishment, because he tried to enforce the law. I mean, have I jumped into a parallel universe where enforcing the law gets you prosecuted and refusing to enforce the law gets you plaudits from the New York Times?
Exactly. Instead of being in court, the man should be getting an award. He has... Not only has he proved that his jail can turn people around, he has made innovative programs over the years. I've known him since the 1990s when he was first elected. He has done so much for the county, saved them money, and now the county has spent $62 million to push this forward. It's a miscarriage of justice, and it's all political. And I cannot believe that, as you said, that Jeff Sessions, and I'm sure the president truly doesn't even know about this. I'm sure it hasn't even got to him.
No, it hasn't. And Mr. Fotis, I appreciate it. I'm up against the clock. I want to remind you, we're live in Charlottesville, Virginia. We're here with WCHV. Mr. Fotis, thank you very much for your time. And one little reminder, too. Check out the two programs we're benefiting tonight here in Charlottesville. ParaderestVA.org. One word, ParaderestVA.org. And ProjectHealingWaters.org. Both of them aimed at helping out veterans and their families and returning vets. It's First Amendment Friday. Heading into Independence Day weekend, you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.